This podcast is part of the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main, and this is the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop.
The murderers and rapists of America would like to thank all them anti-firearms politicians for gun control laws. These laws really reduce citizens' ability to defend their homes and families, making America's streets safer for us. The more gun control there is, the more we can rob, rape, and kill. And when that happens, you anti-firearm politicians will say the same things you always say. We need more gun control. We love it. Congressmen, assemblymen, we know who you are, and you have our vote. In fact, we'd come to your homes and thank you in our own special way, but we know you have armed bodyguards paid for by the public. Once again, thanks for gun control, the career criminals of America.
Welcome to episode number 58, and I want to talk about some shooting techniques, some things that we practice that actually people seldom practice. It's pretty easy to go to a range and stand there and plink, pull out your handgun, point it towards the target, get your sight alignment, and just start pressing the trigger and plinking away. But that's one thing, and it's easy to do, but I'm a firm believer that doesn't prepare you for self-defense. And I like to keep this show about self-defense with a firearm. As you know, occasionally I put in information about competition shooting. In fact, in the next episode coming up after this one, I'm going to talk a little bit more about carry methods and concealed carry methods and holsters for competition, holsters for concealed carry, drawing the pistol, positions to carry, advantages and disadvantages. But in this episode, I want to talk about actual shooting techniques that you very seldom see anybody do. Now, what I'm going to talk about today is going to require that you find a range where you can draw and shoot in different ways, in different positions, and in different methods. So you're probably going to have to get involved in an IDPA match, or you're probably going to have to find an outdoor range somewhere that allows that. This is somewhat difficult to find. I hear from a lot of people that say they have a hard time finding a range that lets them practice in many different ways. Sometimes maybe you just might have to find somebody that owns a lot of land. Maybe you're listening to this and you own a lot of land. You can go out on your own property and practice this as well. So I found a post on the internet, and I'll put a link to the post so you can read the whole thing, but I'm going to paraphrase, put some of this in my own language, and actually give you some personal experiences with this. But shooting techniques that are seldom practiced. First of all, low light shooting. That's the first thing I want to talk about. How many of you have actually gone out and shot a match in low-light conditions? See, you have to understand something, that in a self-defense situation, it's very possible you're not going to have much light if you have to defend yourself. Some people think that night sight's not really necessary. There's some argument. Matter of fact, Gabe Suarez makes a good argument about night sights not necessarily being all that advantageous. And the theory is, if it's too dark to see your sights, it's going to be too dark to see who you're shooting at. You know, I mean, that's a pretty valid argument. But let's talk about low light. Let's talk about not just darkness, but low light. You can still see your sights. You can still see a silhouette of your target, the bad guy you're trying to shoot at. Do you practice that? One thing to think about is that your vision in a dark area, a dark alley, a dark hallway, whatever, it drops to about like 2200 or worse. All right? So your clarity of vision is awful. I got a friend of mine that when he goes to shoot IDPA matches, he actually puts on some very low-power reading glasses that makes the targets and makes the sights somewhat blurry. And he does it on purpose. And I thought this was a pretty good idea. He purposely practices shooting things that are blurry, targets that are blurry, and sights that are blurry, because he wants that practice just in case, for example. I mean, he wears glasses. He wears glasses every day. I asked him why he does that. He says, well, what happens if I'm in some kind of a fight and my glasses are knocked off my face and I can't, you know, I don't have my perfect vision, but I still need to shoot? He wants to be ready for that. Not a bad idea. Also, something to remember in low light conditions is that your perception of color is going to be different. Your ability to distinguish what he has in his hand is not as good either. In other words, you have an attacker coming at you, it's going to be very difficult in a low light condition to figure out what is it that he's holding. Okay, your ability to deliver hits that count at parking lot distances, for example, okay, or just basic room distances. Even at short distances like that, your ability to deliver hits properly is going to be very difficult. And at a long range, all right, let's say you're trying to take a 20-yard shot in low light, that's difficult. It's quite difficult. If you've practiced it and your muscle memory and you're good at point shooting and you're good at knowing where your bullets are going, you're good at calling your shots and so forth, which takes a lot of practice, then you might be able to make effective hits at 20 yards, for example, across a parking lot in low light conditions. But it's not easy. So how do you practice this? Well, if you have access to a range that will allow you to do this, or if you have access to somebody's land that will allow you to do this, go out there at twilight and practice. And as it gets darker and darker, practice more and more. Now, on my Glock 19, the TrueGlow TFO night sights that I have on there, they work great in low light conditions. In fact, I think they work great all the time. I'm a big fan of those sights. I don't hear them talked about that much anymore. I haven't had any problems with them, and I think they're excellent. But, you know, my Glock 34 with the Warren Tactical sights, as you know, you might have heard in previous shows, I like to use black-on-black sights, black front, black rear. Those Warren Savigny Tactical sights that I have on my Glock 34, I tell you what, I've shot that in low light. And, you know, they're not bad. They're not bad. Again, you're not going to be able to line up a perfect precision shot. This isn't bullseye shooting we're talking about. This is practicing in low light, moving and shooting, just trying to make good hits on target. That's what I'm talking about here. Okay, now think about this. Add to it the difficulty of working a flashlight while you have your handgun. Once you start doing that, you might quickly find out that you don't shoot too well in low light conditions when you're having to shoot with one hand and work a flashlight with the other. Okay? So train in reduced light. You're going to find that a lot of your problems are going to come out. You're going to find out what a lot of your shooting problems are when you do this. Another seldom practiced skill, one-handed shooting. I've talked about this before, but practicing strong hand and weak hand is so critical. I have days sometimes where I go out to the range and that's all I do. I'll shoot 150 rounds strong-handed and 150 rounds weak-handed, and then I'm tired. I mean, folks, I got to tell you, it is exhausting doing that, but it's very important to practice it. I mean, if your attacker has got control of one hand, can you shoot with the other? Can you draw with your weak hand? Can you draw the pistol out of your holster with your weak hand? That's something else to think about. In an upcoming podcast, I've got some ideas. I think I'm going to dedicate a whole podcast just to weak hand and strong-handed shooting. But let me talk a little bit briefly about it on this right now. Reactive shootings are overwhelmingly one hand. Okay, in your other hand, you might have a light. You might be on the phone calling the cops. You might be in some kind of a scuffle, all right? You might have a handful of criminal that you're trying to fight off with your other hand. Who knows what might be happening? You know, if you're a lady, you might be carrying a kid, all right? You might be fending off somebody trying to punch you. There's a hundred things that you could possibly be doing with the other hand if you're actually in a real fight. Okay, and if you can't guarantee to yourself that you can get one-handed shots and good follow-ups out past 7 yards, you're deficient. And this is one of the reasons why I say, make sure that you own and carry a handgun that you can shoot easily. Don't get too caught up in caliber, especially when you start getting into one-handed shooting. There's some people that can't handle a real hot-loaded 40 caliber pistol with one hand, especially their weak hand. Some people can't handle a real hot-loaded 45. With one hand. It's one of the reasons why I stick to 9mm, folks. I mean, I'm confident in the 9mm's ability, especially with good ammo. I've mentioned that before, but I can get good follow-up shots, weak-handed and strong-handed, with a single hand, with any of my pistols, using 9mm. And I typically practice out to 10 yards, one-handed shooting. I can get pretty decent hits. I need to practice this. I need to practice this a lot, and a lot of good classes and good courses you teach out there, they teach you how to shoot with one hand and how to draw with both your strong and your weak hand. So practice that when you're out there. All right, another thing you need to practice when you're out there is shooting from all kinds of strange, contorted, weird positions. See, in a real self-defense fight, you never know what kind of a position that you're going to find yourself in. All right, what I'm talking about is like shooting while you're squatting behind a fire hydrant or squatting behind some kind of a low height barrier. shooting from around trees, either side of a tree, either side of a barricade, shooting while you're on your back with the attacker trying to jump on top of you. All right, a lot of good classes teach that. And see, this is one of the good reasons for appendix carry. You know I'm a big fan of appendix carry. And if you really work at it and you get the right holster, folks, you can appendix carry. You have to kind of get over the concept of that gun pointing towards your femoral artery. It's really not that big of a deal. I know a lot of people make a big deal about that. But if you practice good gun safety, if you holster put your gun in the holster first and then put the holster on, you got very, very little chance of setting that gun off. Okay, but let's say you're laying on the ground and you got an attacker jumping on top of you. It's going to be a lot easier to draw from the appendix carry position than it will be from, say, 3:30, 4 o'clock, smaller your back, which I never suggest that anybody carry in the smaller your back, and for the very reason I'm talking about, right? What if your attacker wrestles you to the ground, knocks you over, and you're flat on your back, and your back lands on top of that pistol? You're asking for spine injury, folks, and pretty much your fight is over at that point. Okay? I've been in IDPA matches where we've had shooters that were seat-belted in a car, and they had to shoot from the sitting position in a car. Okay? Or they're crouched down on the ground. Or they're in the prone position. Things like that. You need to practice. You need to practice shooting from almost every position that you can possibly think of. And make it close-range practice first. Start with 3 yards. Start with 9 feet, maybe even a little less, and just different positions. Keep your targets close. Inch them out quick, slowly. I mean, maybe move them from, not inch them out, but start at 3 yards, all right? Then maybe practice at 5 yards after you start getting good hits. Then practice at 7 from all these different strange positions. Which leads me to the next subject I want to talk about, and that is 0 to 3 feet. Fighting and 0 to 3 feet shooting. The average gunfight lays about 7 to 9 feet. Right? 9 feet's 3 yards, roughly. And you might think, well, all right, Bob, then if that's the case, I don't need to worry too much about marksmanship skills. No, not really. I'll get to that a little bit later. But you know what the problem is when you're fighting close with somebody? Is getting to your gun. It's not so much marksmanship is the problem, but it's getting to your gun. See, oftentimes, if you've got somebody that's 10 yards away from you that wants to do you harm, it's quite likely if they're 10 yards away, you'd be surprised. You may not see them. You may not see them till they're practically on top of you. Okay? The guy behind you in the ATM line is more likely to be the aggressor than the guy that's 10 or 12 yards away. And even if you do see the bad guy coming from 10 yards away, you'd be amazed. People can cover a lot of distance while you're trying to just do your draw stroke, okay? And, having the bad guy by the throat's not the time to discover that, oh my God, now I need 2 hands to clear my cover garment and be able to draw your pistol. So practice those different types of scenarios. Too often we find ourselves listening to or reading about an incident involving someone's reaction to a deadly situation, and then we start to wonder, how would we have reacted in that situation? And, often we notice mistakes that the other person made tactically. And sometimes these mistakes are pretty obvious, and they're glaring and they're staring us right in the face. Some of the mistakes you see out there when people respond to a defensive situation is some of them don't have a weapon with them. Some of them have the weapon in a place, but it's not very accessible. Some fail to recognize the threat, and some are just, wrong place, wrong time sort of people. But I think that we all realize the importance of training with our duty or our carry weapon. And I know that there's some police officers and law enforcement people that listen to this podcast. So training with your duty and your carry, both. There's a lot of police officers that show up at IDPA matches where I shoot. And I've heard them say things like, man, I need to get more time in with my carry gun. There's so many people that like to practice with their full-size guns, and then they carry something else. As soon as they leave the shooting range, they put their full-size gun in their shooting bag, and they put on their small little bug or carry gun, or maybe that's their everyday carry. And chances are they haven't practiced that much with it. So I think it kind of begs the question that I want to ask you. How realistic is your shooting training? Okay, and I've often seen people bring a few pistols to the local range, and they fire accurately and they hit what they shoot at. But I don't hardly ever see somebody actually practicing their draw quite a bit. You know, I wonder how often, some of you who are listening to this show, how often do you practice drawing from your holster? If you're an officer, are you practicing from your duty holster and from your typical concealed carry holster? How often do you practice drawing from concealment? In other words, drawing from outside your from underneath your cover garment. Excuse me. And as I mentioned before, have you ever tried to draw your pistol with your weak hand? What happens when you do that? Have you practiced that? Be careful, but practice it. Practice it very slow at first, okay? Folks, do a lot of practicing of drawing your pistol with your weak hand when it's unloaded. Double and triple check, make sure it's unloaded, and practice drawing with your weak hand. Keep your finger off the trigger. But figure out how to get that pistol out of the holster and in the ready firing position with just your weak hand from concealment. That's a challenge. And not only is that a challenge, but, you know, if you happen to be one of these people that carry a gun without a round chamber, you know, I've heard of people doing that. I scratch my head and wonder why. Why do people carry a gun without a round in the chamber? Makes no sense to me at all. You know, it's commonly called Israeli draw. You got to get the gun out of the holster, and then you got to rack the slide if you're carrying a semi-auto pistol. You have to rack the slide and chamber around. How are you going to do that weak-handed? Weak-handed only. I mean, there are ways, but it's not easy, and good Lord, I mean, you know, that's not for me, folks. If I got to use my pistol, I need to have the quickest way to get that out and get that deployed. It's amazing. I've read all kinds of internet banter about people that don't carry a round in the pipe. Why? You know, if your gun safety handling skills are not good enough to make you feel comfortable about carrying one in the chamber, I'd suggest that you work on your gun safety skills first. Get those down and get those down pat. And once you get those down, chamber around and carry a loaded pistol ready to fire. Okay? And also, something else I want you to think about. Think about some of the basic steps that you have to perform to fire your handgun. Do you use a particular grip that works great on the range? Okay? If you have a grip that works real good and allows you to shoot well, now try that grip with one hand. Ask yourself, do you have to significantly change your strong hand grip when your weak hand is removed? Okay? And if the answer is yes, if you do, you're practicing to have an unfamiliar grip on that pistol when you need it the most. So practicing with your single hand, strong hand grip is paramount. That's so important, folks. Something else I want to ask, do you always fire from the same stance? If you're always practicing the same stance all the time, what happens if you cannot get into that stance in a real life situation? Your accuracy is going to suffer. So as I mentioned earlier, practice from different stances, including sitting, including lying down, and also moving. For those of you that keep a gun on the nightstand, beside your bed. As I mentioned earlier, what if you wear eyeglasses? Okay? Do you keep your glasses next to your pistol on the nightstand? What if you need to get to your pistol fast? What if while you're trying to reach for your pistol, you knock your glasses on the floor? Okay, I've done that. Or what if you simply just don't have time to put your glasses on? Have you ever practiced, as I mentioned earlier, have you ever practiced shooting your gun without your eyeglasses? See how well you can do it. See if you can see any of the sights. And when you're trying to decide what sights to put on your pistol, maybe you might want to think about that. Can I see these sights without my glasses on? If not, maybe you might want to consider changing sights. That's where excess big dot sights come in real handy, folks. That's when they're really good. That's one of the reasons why I like them. My vision with or without my glasses is a little bit above average at best. So I've got to have something that I can pick up real easily. And that's why most of the sights that I have on my guns are sights that I can pick up the sight and get a good sight picture, and I can get them fast and quick. Okay? So the whole point of this podcast, and it's a short one. I wanted to keep this short and sweet, but I had some thoughts that I wanted to put on a recording for you as quickly as I could while they were fresh in my mind. the point here that I'm trying to make on you is to impress on you something that if you're a discerning shooter, I want you to think about the fact that things can go very different in real life than they do on that range. Don't take shortcuts in your practice. All right? Don't train for the best cause scenario. Train for the worst cause. Excuse me, worst case scenario. Because that's usually what you're going to find yourself in, is the worst case scenario. Look at every single piece of this puzzle that we call the personal defense puzzle, and make sure that you think about everything and practice everything. See, surviving a lethal encounter, surviving an attack, starts months before it happens. It doesn't start a few seconds before it happens. A few seconds before it happens is when all of your training that you've practiced for months and months and months up to that point, that's when it pays off, is a second or two before you're attacked. And I'll submit to you that most people who are serious about training sometimes get misled. And what I'm talking about that is they get good training and they learn their gun handling skills and they learn their combat marksmanship. And then all of a sudden, after they've learned their gun handling skills and they've learned their combat skills, then all of a sudden something happens in some shooters' minds that I can't figure out. I don't get it. But all of a sudden they transition from all of the self-defense fighting skills that they've learned to how to start shrinking the group size. They're starting to think to themselves, all right, well, now I'm shooting an 8-inch group. How do I shrink that to 5 inches? How do I now shrink that to 2 inches? Oh, my God. Now, how do I get this gun now to shoot inch and a half groups? Who cares if your gun can shoot inch and a half groups? Do you really think you're going to have the time to take such a precise shot in a self-defense situation to where you're going to need to shoot inch and a half groups? Why do people's minds all of a sudden start losing? They start unfocusing from the training skills and the combat skills and the marksmanship and being able to draw and do everything necessary to get themselves into a fighting position. Why do they transfer from that into how good a groups can I shoot? Know what I mean? Or they start doing another thing. They start trying to figure out how can I shoot at 50 yards? How can I shoot at 75 yards? Instead of practicing at 10 to 12 yards or less. Shooting 50 yards with a pistol is fun, and it's great if you just want to go out to the range and have a bunch of fun. But I submit to you, as I've mentioned many times before, there's very little likelihood that you're going to have to take a pistol shot at 50 yards. So I want to close the show by saying, when you go out to the range to practice, it's okay to do weird stuff. Do the weird stuff. Be safe. Let me emphasize safety. Safety is paramount. Don't do stupid stuff. Don't confuse stupid stuff with doing strange stuff. Practice out on the range what nobody else is practicing. Because I guarantee you that 99% of the people that you see out there are not practicing actual fighting skills. They're not practicing combat skills. They're not practicing what they need to know in case they get into a fight. What they're practicing is standing there and very slowly lining up a shot and bang. And then they take 5 or 6 more seconds and bang. And then they wait another 5 or 6 seconds and then bang. And all of a sudden they look at their shooting partner that they're with and they go, oh, look at that, man. Inch and a half groups. Check it out. And when I see that, I kind of chuckle. And I don't make fun of other people at the range because, first of all, I'm glad they're out there shooting. But, you know, when I see them clapping their hands and high-fiving each other because they did inch and a half groups, I chuckle. I just chuckle because they can't stand there and wait 5 or 6 seconds or more between shots in a real-life fight. And I'd like to hear some of your comments on that, because I know that there's some of you listening to this show right now that unfortunately you found yourself in a gunfight. And if you have that kind of experience, I'd like to hear from you. I'm sorry if that's happened to you. And I'm glad you survived. If you have some light that you can shed on some of the topics that I just covered in this podcast, please do so. Interact with me over at the Gun Rights Radio Network forums. You can go to gunrightsradio.com and click the forum tab. You can also interact with me on my webpage at handgunworld.com. And folks, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel as well. If you can support the show, that would be great. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring this show to a close, folks. Thanks for listening to episode number 58 of the Handgun World Show. I am your host. I'm Bob Main. And the reason I carry a gun? Well, it's because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money.